Okay, that's fair.
So why did you start listening to the show?
I think Kathy, honestly, just like she self-promoted.
Who?
Kathy, Kate. Sorry, yeah, Kate. Longtime friend, Kate.
Kathy.
Yeah, he calls me that sometimes.
All right.
To be transparent, Alex and I are friends.
We're friends.
Okay.
We're buds, I would say.
All
right. Like buds is it's a more than friend, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I'm honored by that title of a bud.
Okay, I appreciate that. And you guys knew each other in high school, right?
Not really.
We went to high school together, but we were not friends
until... Are we defining the friendship right now? That's interesting.
I'm just trying to get a feel.
Yeah.
DT, what?
Designing.
Down to...
The friendship.
Oh, designing.
No, that's what did you say? Design.
That's not what DTF means.
It's because it's DTRs, define the relationship, is where I was going. And then I was like, no, it doesn't work. I know. I'm moving on.
Honestly, like, since it is 2017, so we could check Facebook, and that's when you really know when a friendship begins, right? Like, that validates everything.
It's true.
When you become Facebook friends.
Yeah, validates, so we could check that, everything. But we've been friends for a while. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That is not why we write Alex on.
Just because I like to talk about him.
Right, like, that's part of the reason. But besides his love of Skrull and his love of Kate, Alex is also I had it in front of me and it's gone now.
A graphic design.
Graphic design and animation student.
A double major. Double whammy.
At DePaul University Senior.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's weird for me, too.
this is the end. We're approaching the end of the tunnel. But today we wanted to talk about all things illustration and design and really the way in which rhetoric informs design, I think, is kind of... Because we talking before the show, we kind of came to the conclusion that there's a lot of overlap between writing and illustration and design work when it comes to intention and like framing a particular... message.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
we'll see.
Well, yeah, we're gonna put that to the test.
Yeah.
I have a strong feeling that they have a lot of
that's your
overlaps.
Hypothesis.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Oh, right. We're a scientific method.
We're gonna put that
to I'm terrible at science, but let's do it.
Okay. So I guess first and foremost, I want to get a feel for you as an artist, Alex. I should say, as a private plug / disclosure, that Alex just published art with 14 East last night. We published a story about buddy cops, and Alex did a piece of art for us about...
What are buddy cops?
Buddy cop is a genre of movie.
Oh.
Yes. Like the...
Like from the
80s. I was thinking like officer friendly kind of... thing.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It's like the mean cop that's like the straight laced and the casual cop who's like a former criminal, and together they solve things.
Yeah, that's not at all like officer friendly who goes to like preschools and shows kids.
Friendly?
It's they like are police officers that show kids that police officers are friendly and they're helpful.
So Alex did
buddy cops, yeah.
Alex did a design for that.
Yeah, thank you for letting me test the waters with that.
No, we're excited to keep working with you.
Yeah.
And we want to see what you can do. But give me a broader sense for what kind of art that you're doing all the time, what you've had published, what animation. I'm gonna ask a lot of questions, but give me like an overview.
Sure. I've only just thought about myself as an artist like this year.
Really?
Before then, yeah, I doodled, as we say, but I was never comfortable with like the actual title of artist. I still don't, like, it's weird to me. Self-promotion is strange as well.
Oh yeah.
But I came into college as a design major because that's what I wanted to do. I didn't know exactly what that meant at the time. Still don't. just kind of figuring it out. But yeah, and then I kind of fell in love with animation after a few classes.
I was gonna say graphic design specifically, though.
Yes, graphic design specifically. And then I made a few like rough films and took a few like experimental animation classes because that's kind of what I'm interested in. So when I say artist, I mean like that kind of art. I mean like pushing boundaries, I suppose. That's what interests me about everything. And like discovering things through a process. So it's not like the most commercial thing, but that's what I love about it as well. So that's what I say when I say artist. That's what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely. And really, I'm excited to keep going on this episode because even before we got in the show, like Alex was telling us, like, I don't really talk about my work very often. And when I said in the prep for the show, like, I have so many questions I want to ask you, he was like, yeah, me too. because we're kind of on this journey of self-discovery together. And that's like a really good, I think writing is a good way to do that. And I think it sounds like you're saying that art is also a really great way to get the ball rolling on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I mean, I'm not a writer, but
everyone who writes is a writer.
Everyone who writes is a writer, mm-hmm. Exactly. But I mean, how do you approach writing yourself? Like, how do you just ideate, I guess? Because for artists, it happens a lot, like in a raw sketchbook. Like, ideas will come to you, right?
Alex is holding a sketchbook. It's this book in his hands. It is in the flesh.
It's always on him.
It is always on me. And that's a huge staple, I think, that I found of artists. Just this past year, like, I never thought about carrying a sketchbook with me all the time. And since I've done it, I find my work has improved dramatically.
Really? You are always carrying a sketchbook?
Mm-hmm. Always. Like, it's always in my pocket.
You're saying
you
wasn't.
No, but, like, you weren't always.
No.
This is only recent? That's crazy.
But it's not like you stop thinking. You just stop recording.
Ugh. Wow.
So, I mean, are writers the same way? Like, how do you
I'm like that with iPhone notes. If I have an idea, I write it down. But
yeah.
I think it's a little... I mean, do you ever, like, take a sketch in a sketchbook and then, like, make it into something, like, bigger?
That's the whole point, yeah.
Is it
that's,
really? That's
yeah,
what
as a designer,
you, that's so
like,
cool.
Every design that I do, I probably have about 20 sketches, just rough comps that I flush out, and then...
What's a comp? Composition?
Yeah, like it's a nothing. It's just to get a general, idea of layout, composition, templates, stuff like that.
I just don't know the vocab.
Sure. Yeah.
That's interesting, though, because I would almost... I guess my... incorrect assumption would have been that like sketching is just like practicing, but no, it's like for
you have to be conscious about it. You have to be critical when you sketch. Yeah, I think
right. You're not just tracing lines. You're kind of like discovering what this thing is.
Yeah, you're exploring. Yeah. Exactly.
And writing is very similar. I don't do a lot of iPhone notes. I'll do like voice recordings if I just like am walking somewhere and something encourages me, because I don't like stopping and typing because it's just like it's the wrong like mental space.
And you go back and you listen and reflect on those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But it's usually
you love your voice, don't you?
He said it, not me.
Yeah. I hate the sound of my own voice, incidentally. I articulate things strangely.
But that's interesting because I feel like speaking is a different medium than writing.
Absolutely.
So I feel like I need to write my ideas down because it is
inherently language different?
Well, let's get into like the specifics of what we're talking about when we say write an idea. So are you writing like seven words that kind of captures, you're pulling up your phone, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
But are you just saying like idea involving dogs and me being sad? Like, that's like the sort of thing that I'm voice recording. Not that specifically, but if
that's intriguing. I could do something with that.
It's sort of like
makes me sad. Dog makes me sad.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
it's more like a couple sentences that's like, this is something interesting that I'd like to look at more in depth later. A lot of times that's a journalism thing. Like there's like a story idea, like who makes the CTA steal? Like where does that come from? And like, is it ethically sourced? Like all these crappy questions, right?
That's what you do.
I think about that all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't write those down?
I know. I will voice record
voice
it.
Them.
Yeah.
How frequently do you find yourself like turning those into something eventually?
Oh, that's a good question. Not super frequently, because at any given time I'm usually working on like several projects. So right now I'm kind of avoiding ideas because I already have so much on my plate that I just don't want to get lost from doing the projects that I'm doing right now.
I'm the same way. I like wake up regularly every day and I go, oh, this is I have another project that I want to do. Yeah. And then it ends up just it has to just set aside because there's too much going on, you know?
So when you say writing down an idea, are you writing down like a paragraph? Are you writing down, what are you writing?
No. I do maybe 3 or 4 words. It'll be like story about this and this happening.
Okay.
Or I write down a lot of things that people say that I think are really funny.
Sure.
Alex specifically last weekend, I was looking at this, said like, you never carry the same walking stick. That's not the point. I was like, what? Like, what does that even mean? But I wrote it down.
It's always a different journey.
See,
that's a completely different question or like topic. It's the same walking stick. It's a different journey.
Oh, I guess I get what you're saying. No, but it changes the journey. The walking stick defines the journey.
Okay.
Hilarious, like right? I had to write that down.
Like a companion, it changes. A quest changes.
Sure.
Yeah, we get it. We get it.
Let's stop this. Stop me now. I could go on.
That's what I'm saying. So I do like things that I think are funny, like that in general, or like if I just see something funny, like I just write it down. Also because stand-up has taught me to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I took a stand-up class last year. And that just like, because you realize that for me personally, like if things are happening that are funny throughout the day, like I'll like laugh at them and be like, that would be fun, something funny to write about. But then mm-hmm. I forget about it forever. So if I like write it down, it like makes it something that I can actually write about because right. I will forget it otherwise.
Yeah, it continues to exist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In particular, when I am writing a story for 14 East, if I'm reporting on something, like I'm in a scene, in an event, doing something, I am just constantly dictating what I see into my microphone.
Oh, that's cool.
And actually, when we were covering the Trump protest last year, I was following these activists leaving Wabash and going farther in town. And as I was following, I was dictating like where they were, what the street address was, what I saw. And then that recording was used in a soundscape that we made later that night. And so you could, like, you heard like the chanting, and they like B. Eldridge, who was the old Radio DePaul general manager, like superimposed my speaking over the chanting.
That's
kind of
dope.
In and out. It was
That's
really
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I sounded a little bit dumb, but like I was okay with it because it was kind of there was so much good like noise behind it that I was like, who cares?
Yeah, no, who cares? The information is cool enough.
I would say roughly 12% of my. So you said talking about things that you see that are funny mm-hmm. that you. I probably like 12% of like my audio notes are stupid things that pigeons do.
Pigeons are so fascinating.
Pigeons
I will
are
watch a pigeon.
Amazing.
I really
do. You draw
will.
Pigeons ever?
No. I mean, yeah, but pigeons fascinate me for the movement. Not
yes.
like their
is that
habits.
Like an animation
they're,
thing.
Yes, it is because mm-hmm. they twitch. They're very quick things. So if you ever watch a bird walk, they can only see when their head is still. That's why they pivot as they walk. They, you know.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. That's so interesting.
But the mechanics of their body, like they have to create momentum with mm-hmm. their
okay, so this goes back to a question I wanted to ask. Yeah. Why, like you started as graphic design, and I remember you like randomly saying like, yeah, I think I'm going to pick up like an animation major. And I was like, Jesus, that seems like a lot of work.
Too much. I'm like making a film right now, consuming my life. It's the worst. Yeah.
Yeah. So why did you pick animation? Like, why did you pick that up? Did you just take one out of curiosity?
I think
did you take a class?
No, it really rooted in, I became self-aware of my role as a designer, and you're always following, It's always like this debate between expression and function. Design is always problem solving, right?
Interesting.
So it's not like when you're an artist, you're not necessarily a designer. There's always this ongoing debate of style versus function, form, and content. Mm. So I just wasn't feeling expressive enough, and maybe that's like me being an artist, if you want to say it.
He just looked over his shoulder as if someone's gonna like catch him calling himself an artist.
If you dare. That's how I am though. So then I discovered animation and I fell in love with it.
How did you discover it though? I wanna know the moment.
Oh, the moment. I was making a really bad stop motion piece because I'd never explored stop motion. And in my opinion, stop motion is the purest animation. It's making something not living come to life, you know?
That's cool.
And maybe I have a God complex like that. Maybe I just want things to be under my control all the time. I want to be the puppet master of the world, I suppose. Oh. I sound
like,
bad. I sound really bad.
No, you don't.
Okay.
Okay. You're doing the thing that I do where like you say something, it's terrible, and it's like, no, but guys, I'm self aware of this impulse.
I think we're very similar. Like we just talk and then we find our way there. We just have to hurt ourselves.
Yeah. There's some bumps along the way.
Yeah.
Enough of that. Thank you.
No, so it really came out of this need to find some form of expression, I suppose, because design is great, and it satisfies my need to create systems and make order in the world, but sometimes, a lot of the time, I need to tear down that order. And
graphic design takes away your need. What did you just say?
It's a different kind of creative thinking, you know?
To put the world in order? That's insane.
Yeah, graphic design is a form of organization, effectively.
Yeah, it's creating communication through semiotics is what it is. It's trying to deliver.
Define semiotics for us.
Oh, it's visual cues. So when you see a sign on the street,
you are
instantly
so smart.
Like it communicates, you know, like an exit sign has so many meanings and connotations behind exit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. So there are like literally a bazillion connections between writing and design. Like, it is all communication, organization,
yeah,
process-based. Oh, my God.
So I guess I have a question. Brendan, you deal a lot with, journalism, right? So, like, that's critical writing.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy, you deal with creative writing. Like, that's where you're nonfiction creative writing, I suppose. Like, how do you approach those? Obviously, they must be approached differently, right? What's your process like, I guess? I'm just interested.
Mm. For me, it starts with, like, a feeling. Like, if something gives me a feeling, I, like, compartmentalize, like, the details of it. Whether, like, it's with a person or just in, like, a setting. You know, like, sometimes I walk around at night and it's just, like, such a, like, cold night in Chicago, walking around with, like, the wet leaves on the ground, that I'm like, this is such, like, a feeling that I want to write about that feeling. So I usually have to, like, write down whatever the circumstances are. That's what I put in my notes, like, story about what.
So when you write this down, it's like you holding on to a feeling or a mood, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And then you channel that into a writing, a piece of.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I would actually, you made the distinction between journalism and creative nonfiction between me and Kate, but I would say that the work that I do is just technically creative nonfiction with, like, more argument behind it more often than not, because magazine journalism tends to not be as more narrative, more scene, and less, like, objective, hard, whatever you want to call it, like, hard news. So the problem with journalism is that it has to be tethered to both like a significant, if that word means anything, but like sort of a newsy thing that has to be like, some, this thing is happening right now.
And a relevancy.
Yes, it has to be tied to something in the present that's, like, sort of in the public interest or a public agenda, which can be hard. I would love to just write about, I could spend so much time writing about, like, this room, like what's happened in this room, like, my personal experience with it, what has happened in it. But I couldn't publish that anywhere, really. It'd be really hard to do that.
Yeah.
You couldn't publish that anywhere in a
journalism outfit. Yeah. That's professing to do journalism. So much outfit? An institution outfit. You know, like, that's like a very
specific. I've
just
never heard that before.
It's like a.
I thought you meant to say outlet, and I was like, what?
Outlet works, but I did mean outfit, like a trading post. It's like a trading outfit. Like, it's kind of like an old, like, pioneering term.
But you could submit it somewhere else.
Yeah, no, certainly, yeah. Let's see if I can take it. But yeah, so often my writing tends to have to be tethered to something that's very real, and then I have to find elements in the world that kind of tell that story, which is really stressful. I'm trying to do that for this piece about religion and politics right now. I'm trying to find activists who are struggling to incorporate religion into their politics, and that's a really hard thing to articulate, let alone find.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my writing tends to be looking for these things, and then the writing process actually is almost secondary at a certain point.
Oh,
wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. See, because when I hear that, similar to design and I guess art, when you talk about those two, like, design is always following something else. It's something a lot more tangible, or it exists differently, you know?
Yeah, it has to be tangible for it to be communicatable.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Whereas, like, your animation.
Purely, I do that for me. I don't care who, I don't care. That's, I guess that's essentially, I don't care. I don't do it for anyone else.
Yeah.
I don't expect anything from it.
Right. I mean, and this is going to get really, actually, we should probably take our first break before we dive into this.
Yeah,
I was just like, all right, guys. Here is Good Morning from the Bleachers, or just Bleachers.
I think it's just Bleachers,
Okay, cool.
From Bleachers.
It's kind of a formality. I think it's just Bleachers.
Yeah. Okay, let's bring it home.
Woke up, I'm in the in-between, honey. One foot out, and I know the weight is coming. Because I left it by the bed last night. Open my eyes and stare and pray for life. Always one foot out when you say goodbye to the one that you love. One dream away from the ones above. That's such a rhythm in my life these days. So I hold on tight and I learn to behave. Because I lied to you, I lied to you, I lied to your face in the summer. Your face in the summer. You had long hair then. I'm singing now. Good morning to the cops. Good morning to my upstairs neighbor. And to the kids at 42. Anyone who lent me a paper. somebody lend me a favor. Woke up in the corner store, someone saying my name. Everybody moving around, acting like nothing had changed. But something had changed in me. Yes, she touched me, said, I know you're not to blame. What a weight to live under. What a lie that's been covered. I'm talking bad.
I'm a comedian.
Rolling thunder. I know I left you on the street last night. So I'm holding on, grabbing out a light. How come I lied to you? I lied to you. I lied to your face in the summer. Your face in the summer. I had my hair short then. I had my hair short then. I'm singing now.
Welcome back to Scrawl Radio. You've been listening to me, Brendan Peterson, Kate Harrington, and Alex Moy. That was a weird introduction. But we've been discussing the intersection between design, animation, and writing. And as we've been having this conversation, Alex has been so kind as to turn the conversation back on us and to turn the questions on us and ask us about our writing process in order to illuminate the various ways in which the two intersect.
I love it when people talk about what I'm doing actively, like while I'm doing. I'm not self-aware.
That's what you here.
You don't have a lot of like narration in your life.
Yeah, no, I do. I'm just a character, you know.
Just no, you're body. The protagonist.
Yeah, okay. But not the narrator. So
goodness,
it's
okay. So
yeah, no. Like I appreciate being referred to as the narrator in your life in this moment.
I love your voice too. I would have you be the narrator.
Okay, cool.
My life.
Okay,
cool. I would do that. If someone paid me to be the narrator for them, it would probably be a lot of work, unless they were boring. But
never the case with me. Don't worry.
No, you'd be. I'm sure it would be.
I live
we'd
an
have
exciting
a,
life.
A good time.
Yeah. Okay, that's enough.
All right, let's move on. The intersection of writing and design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were we just talking about?
Going on a tangent. You were about.
I was
to
about
something.
To start a huge
you written
tangent.
It down.
I should have written it down.
Sketchbooks. Come on.
Put it in writing.
Tangibility and writing and design, and we're tethered.
We were talking about
so,
the process.
An interesting idea that occurred to me at the end of the episode, or end of the segment, was that we are tethered to language. Like we have to have, and graphic design is too to some extent.
Yeah.
But we are tethered to specifically the written word, which is like an extension of human thought, right? It's a very literal distillation of human thought. Design came before language. Just
yes.
in the spectrum of humanity. Like people were doing the bulls on the
communication.
Walls.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so in that way, there is something more like primordial about it, something more.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. And in the design field, this is often it's like McLuhan. I forgot his first name, but he goes on and talks about the way that the medium is the message, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something it's always hammered into a designer's head. It's like the communication happens before you actually take in what it is, you know? How do I talk about that?
It's just very lofty.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of lofty. But you read a message through the way it exists in the world.
So I think you're kind of arguing
like
that
you know a road sign means road sign by the without even seeing
just
what
it says. Just
because
of the conventions of the medium, yeah. That's which I think example, can go back to the same, when we talk about the conventions of genre, like we mm-hmm. work in specific genres, whereas you work in specific mediums.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Thank you. There are a bazillion connections between what we both do.
A bazillion. This is an annoying question, and I fully acknowledge that, but is it easier to communicate an idea through written word or through images?
Wow.
What do you think?
For Alex, personally.
For me?
Yeah, for personally. You. We'll go around. We'll talk about it individually.
I think I struggle with both, honestly. Mm. I don't think I'm good at one or the other.
Well, okay, sure. I don't think so. I couldn't. I could. I mean, drawing.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying we should just ask Alex, because we can't.
I think
he can definitely write. I don't know. Would you say that anybody who illustrates is an illustrator?
Yes, I would. I don't. Oh. I really don't hold on to those ideas that like drawing is a thing that you become good at. Anyone draws. Anyone can draw. It's just a different way of communicating. Everyone sees the world differently, and however way you want to interpret it, it's. I mean, obviously, more things communicate better than others. They're, sure. There are technical
strategies
yeah,
and methods.
Like
yeah.
Perspective is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. Like there are just a lot of like fine-tuned details, but anyone who draws is an illustrator. Is a drawer.
Well, I was going to ask, talking about illustrating, drawing. I lost it.
So I guess...
But again, it follows the content of what you're...
Oh, I remembered.
Yeah.
How do you evaluate like illustration, or how do you evaluate a design, like a piece that someone... Like in your classes, I know you talk about doing crits, which is...
Yeah, and we should talk about writing first, because like with writing, like there's... You can argue clear communication... Right, like you can argue whether or not something is clear on the basis of grammar and on the basis of
yeah,
content.
Yeah.
Like there is a certain level of transferableness that is quantifiable via grammar and stuff like that.
Yeah,
right?
And conventions,
right.
And mm-hmm. advice.
Yeah, yeah, and just like stylistic stuff, formulas, yeah, basically. Yeah. Illustration, unless you're going for hyperrealism, and it's mm-hmm. the metric of how realistic that is
yeah,
much
what
harder
metrics
to
do you
quantify.
Use?
So talk about crits.
It's yeah, I mean, well, crits are different when we talk about like my animation classes versus my design classes. Design
yeah.
is built on principles. We have like grounded ways of communicating and talking about design. And I guess that starts from like the Bauhaus movements and like the development of international styles, where like when you think about Swiss design, it's like clean, it's cut, it's almost minimal. And that's kind of where design is taken. That's the path it's taken going into now. But when we talk about like illustration or art, I don't know if I have an answer for that. Like, how do you do that in class? Yeah.
So what elements, like, do you look for certain elements? Do you do it based on like subjectivity? Like, do you say like as a viewer?
Right. And we should like, even clarify, like, are you looking for those things, or are you being told to look for those things in an academic setting? If that makes sense. Like, are you being kind of molded to think about your art in a certain way that can be quantified?
When we talk about commercial art, yes, but no, you can't teach someone how to see, you know? Mm. I think that sounds pretentious, but it's true. You can't teach someone to be a good artist. An artist has to, like, it, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
so then what is
are,
a good like, artist?
I, yeah, I don't think there are bad artists. I guess that's what I'm saying, ultimately.
Okay, so someone pulls in...
But things communicate. Yeah, I guess you're right. Things
and
communicate.
An experimental animation, mm-hmm. right? You're watching
yeah.
a 30-minute
oh, okay.
film
yeah,
in
yeah,
your
yeah.
class. How do you critique it? Do you do it based on story? Do you do it based on...
Right. So when we talk about art, you have to understand that there's no wrong, but there's miscommunication, definitely.
Ah, that's good. That's yeah. good.
Okay, hold on. Talk about that for a second. Because is it miscommunication or is it alternative communication? That
different,
sounds
which
like
is not
it's,
as
alternative it's, interpretations.
Okay,
is what it is. Right now, so my films are like they tend to be a little more poetic, like visually poetic. I don't deal with narratives that often. They stress me out.
But what does poetic mean in the term in when you're not talking about words?
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen like a Maya Darren film or a Stan Brakhage film. These are like avant-gardists, right? Where they use the medium as a tool, the same way that you write.
Avant-gardists?
Yeah, avant-garde artists.
That's amazing.
Avant-gardist.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, and the same way that you write, like there are certain rhythms and there's certain syntactical, like there's syntax that you use when you want to emote through words, right? Yeah. I don't know, I'm asking, but
yes.
Yeah, it's the same way with visual cues, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I think that's
always
a great...
You're piecing things together and mm-hmm. stitching things together.
A great way to look at it is how... it's just how effectively did they get their purpose or achieve whatever purpose they had for it.
Yeah.
Was it successful
sometimes
or not?
It's,
is it effective or not? Yeah.
It's sometimes you can't define it in words, I suppose, right. Which is weird in a capitalist society where you have to
quantify
everything. The word we keep going back to is quantify.
Yes, yes.
We're struggling under the like atlas the weight of capitalism. We'll get back to that in the next segment.
Tangents.
So
yes.
One idea that, mm-hmm. that keeps popping in my brain, again, is the idea of communication or the goals of communication in either of our respective means or modes of art. One of the goals of writing, actually, I want to take this back to the intention of the artist, so writer or designer.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a difference in the goals of an artist compared to a writer? Because let's say that, just as a general statement, writers have a more concrete idea of what their goal is, what they're writing about, what they want to communicate. Whereas artists, knowing that they don't have the same concrete like sureness of words, oftentimes might be doing something that is subject to interpretation. Do you think that artists are more open to that and writers have a more concrete idea of what they want? Or do most people who are quote unquote artists understanding of the fact that people are probably going to interpret their stuff however they want?
Yeah. I mean, when you say like intention is a huge word in that question. Mm-hmm. When you create something, you have at least artists that exhibit or are in galleries, the artists that we think of, they're very critical, I think. You don't make a piece of work without being critical.
Mm.
I think you absolutely need to have an intention in mind. You also have to understand that if you're not straightforward about what your intention is, it's going to be different. It's not miscommunication exactly, it's just read differently.
I think that's
beautiful too.
I think that's
a goal
art,
of art.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the point.
Yeah,
and maybe that's what differentiates.
You appreciate it for so many different things. Like artists appreciate art for not only the concept but the craft. I think once you do something, you gain a respect for it. And I think writing is the same way, isn't it? Like you appreciate. Like I have list of artists and stuff that I like. I just appreciate and they inspire me so much just because what they do is so different. Like, do you have writers that you, or publications that you look at and you go, wow, that's incredible. Like, I wish I could do that. I want to do that.
Sure. Like anything the New Yorker has ever published. Right.
Like
The Atlantic is really great. Like any, I like magazines. I particularly like magazines that can tell this grand story and have this crazy amount of research and find these incredible people to tell that story. That's really important to me. One thing that you were talking about, and this is like me talking about myself, and so Kate's going to hate me for it.
No, please do.
But when I wrote about Nicole Bean, my sophomore year, did a profile on the head of College Republicans.
Yep.
Talking about this idea of intention. I was critical of Nicole Bean, but I did not hate Nicole Bean. When I published the story on Facebook, I had all my liberal friends cheer me on for tearing this person apart. I had conservative family members telling me that they were like so happy that I told this girl's story and that she was so strong and inspirational. And then this is actually much later. This story was submitted to the Catholic Press Awards, like our association, something like that. And the guy who reviewed my story tore me apart for it. He did not enjoy it. In part because he said like, the line that he used was, the writer was clearly trying to do something, but what it was is not clear.
Interesting.
That's
Isn't
intention.
That journalism, though?
To some extent. Yeah, to some extent.
No, but...
Like, I had an opinion, but I didn't make it clear.
Yeah, no, but that's the whole point. It's like, you can't introduce content to the world without criticism. Art is criticism of culture. You know what I mean?
Right.
And writing is the same way. You can't create without setting an agenda... subconsciously. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's saying
he says set an agenda all the time.
Is it really?
Yes.
People have, I Yeah.
That's
I'm a very cynical person, Brendan. Like, I'm an optimistic, cynical person.
Well, I'm in a compelling characters class with Miles Harvey right now, and we're doing nonfiction profiles or oral histories. And what's so interesting about nonfiction is that technically, with this assignment specifically, asking, like, talking to one person specifically, technically they're like the writer, quote unquote, because they're the one saying the words, and it's up to us to edit the words into like finding what's significant, quote unquote, and finding like where the story actually is. And I think that's where like the Nicole Bean article kind of reveals that you can only craft it into like what you have. Basically, you take what you have and you mold it into something, but it can still be up to interpretation.
Yeah,
for anybody.
I'm not particularly proud of that story anymore. Like it.
Because you've grown like as like a writer. Yeah,
it feels like I wrote it a long time ago, and I would have been less snarky, and I would have probably taken it a different way. And
that's amazing. And an amazing self-discovery.
I have not read it in a while, but I read it like within a year, and I was like, this doesn't feel like the way I remember it, and it doesn't. Like, and I should say, like, the subject of the profile, Nicole, liked it. Her mom discovered it, like, 6 months after I published it and shared it on Facebook and gave us a huge spike in traffic out of nowhere.
Brendan, you did the thing that no one does. You introduced something and had two parties, completely different people, appreciate it for different reasons. I don't know how you did that.
Yeah.
I don't either.
But that's success, I think.
I
don't know what success
is,
but I think that's it.
Yeah.
I don't
but
know.
Really, it just came from what you saw and observed and what she said.
Wow. Yeah.
And then Alex uses art.
Yeah, I think I want to get to a point as an artist where I can be that critical. Just different, though. Like, I want to visualize it differently than that. Yeah.
Can you give an example of a way in which you have tried to be critical with your art? Like, journalism, it's pretty easy. Like, that's like kind of the point of journalism, is to be critical with words. But with design, it's a little bit harder for me to appreciate outside the realm of very literal, like political cartoons, for instance, which is kind of crass at a certain point.
Yeah,
and very specific.
And those are kind of going out of style now. Like, if you want to be an illustrator, you don't go into newspapers anymore. That's I mean,
that's interesting.
I don't know. I think I guess that's where I want to go next. I don't know if I have a piece of work in the past that I've been as critical, but only now have I become comfortable with like putting stakes in the ground with where I sit, both politically and just socially.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And so like now, well, in general, is that what it sounds
yeah, just
like?
Yeah, as me as a person
Yeah,
my personhood.
Okay.
Adorable.
Let's take a second break. We're going to take a listen to Fantasy Island by The Shins. This was a recommendation of our... I'm going to call you a co-host for today because you are...
Radio.
You asked us a question, so I think you've earned it.
Thank you.
But anyways, here's The Shins. We'll see you on the other side.
life, compromise on wings of resignation. Big gray eyes staring from the sky. Am I humble enough now? I've always had something to hide. My skinny arms, my evil intentions. And back at school, hitting the fire alarms, desperately wanting attention. Well, I was just a boy.
Welcome back, Squirrel Nation. Today we're talking all things illustration, animation, and writing, and the ways in which they intersect. Thank you again, Alex Moy, for coming on to the show. It's been lovely to have you as our co-host, our guest co-host, and Kate is also here.
That's done.
So really, thank
really
you,
bad.
Kate, for being on the show with us.
Okay, I see.
It's been an honor.
The show has been hijacked.
Lovely and talented. Kate Harrington.
She's here.
Kathy.
So, Kate, what are we going to talk about?
I want to ask Alex about, this is something we have talked about a little bit just in being friends, but something that comes up all the time at the Writing Center is collaboration. It's one of our, I think that's a core value. And, you know, that's the entirety of our work is collaborating together to improve writing or to revise something. Can you do that with art?
You do it in the form of critiques, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And it's different with art than it is, like, you're always critiquing something different. Design is much more rooted, like, we have principles and foundations of design that you can touch upon, and things are more successful than others. It's interesting. It took me a bit to learn that as a designer. Because when I first started, I was like, whatever, like, rules are, this is design. And then you kind of start to actually, like, pay attention and notice things in the world, and you realize, no, these are rules for a reason. They're a lot more, it's like, it's not, quantitative, though. You feel it. You have to really...
Intuitive, right?
Intuitive, yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting that you said that you can only, like, improve to, or, like, collaborate to improve art by critiquing it, which is just what we do, which is by providing feedback.
Right. No, yeah, exactly. That process is the same. Everyone, I don't want to sound like dumb, but everyone dreams differently. And so you have to work alone in order to improve once you then come together with those ideas. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was lovely.
That was lovely.
I wasn't didn't dumb. Phrase it well, but
well, and the way you the same what idea. You said earlier was just now. You said that it's more about how art makes you feel, and the art critiques are a way of getting to that. There's a part of me that really wishes that it was easier to get to that point with writing, because I feel like so often with writers, particularly at the
this
college
is my
level,
entire life, yeah.
Right, particularly at the college level, but in general, like we spend so much time with like the syntax, the rhetoric, the technical grammar stuff, and just like making moves work, and we don't spend nearly as much time talking about what that move is, what you are doing with a character, with a narrative, at least in my experience. Like you are in fiction, so you have more experience with character development. But for me, it's always like I spend so much time thinking about grammar, commas, quotation marks, like how the writing becomes presentable, that I don't think as much about as much as I want
feel,
to.
Right?
Yes, but how it feels. It kind of feels secondary.
So when you talk about like the grammar and the commas and everything, that's to me, I hear that as the structure of the story. It's not necessarily the story itself. Is that distracting to you? Like, I would find that distracting if I were.
Well, I think it's definitely different for journalism, right? Because you're doing so much copy.
And it's so
writing?
So
editing.
It's a lot more formula driven.
Yeah.
Like there has to be, especially in a classic news story, you have like the lead, you have the nut graph, which is like where you the lead is what's happening. The nut graph is the context of the story.
Okay.
And then everything else kind of follows like a pattern from there. Magazine journalism has a lot more flexibility, but even then, like you have like a scene to open and then your research and then your characters and then another scene. And so like it does have like this kind of like familiar rhythm to it.
And when you read pieces of journalism, you can recognize that and
find
like more successful ways to approach it.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I also just think that like journalism is so much of a stylistic thing that it needs to be perfectly. What's the word?
Stylistic kind of makes sense.
It just needs to be perfect.
It needs to be
for publication. Right?
Publishable, I guess, is the word you're looking for.
It
has to be regimented in a certain way.
Yeah.
There's like the New Yorker doesn't have a whole lot of room for like art house. You know. I've gotten a couple of personal essays this year that have been like a little more avant-garde. And we haven't published any yet. We're still working with the writer on it to make it a little bit more our style. But the New Yorker doesn't really publish avant-garde journalism. Maybe some fiction that's a little bit out there.
Mm-hmm.
But more
why do you think that is?
Tradition. There's a certain culture at the New Yorker.
Yeah.
They've been doing what they've been doing for a very long time. And there are just other publications that are more known for being avant-garde, whereas the New Yorker has like this sort of longer form, narrative-driven audience.
So when I talk about like avant-garde, it's very interesting for me. Like this is why I'm so fascinated with it, is because, so like the avant-garde, like it's rooted in like military tactics, right? So it's like the front line. And the idea behind avant-garde is that it's these artists or these pioneers of art that are just tearing down these boundaries. And it's such like it's a noble thing for me, because you don't see the implications of what you're doing until like 30 years have gone by, and then the mainstream picks it up because they're always like trying to find new fresh trends, right? So they're the originators of content. Like, do you find that kind of overlap in journalism? Like, can you look at different eras of journalism and point back to where stylistically things have shifted?
Oh, that's a really hard question.
Yeah, there may not be an answer. I don't know.
Avant-garde journalism.
It's also hard to, you read really relevant things, I feel. So it would be hard to like be able to evaluate that while it's happening.
Oh, that's true.
I spend a lot of time kind of in the
culture.
Current of news.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right? That would take, you think that would take...
Well, I will, like, spent a lot of my undergraduate looking at historic journalism.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to go back to the Aletheia, as I always do, but this is Kate squints. But the Aletheia was a group of students who started their own paper in the 70s. And so they couldn't just make a blog. They couldn't just, like, buy a WordPress domain and suddenly have a website, even though more work goes into it than that. They had to buy a printing press. They had to have advertisers. They'd have so many things just to make it even remotely feasible. But that style of sort of that style of, I don't want to say resistance driven, but that's sort of what I'm getting at. People who are publishing in an alternative voice style.
It's like a
and
DIY.
Yes, that kind of started in the 60s and 70s as printing became more widely acceptable after the 50s. And now we have blogs. And so like, there's this culture of self-independent publishing that started when independent publishing was really difficult. And today it's much easier, but that same spirit of resistance and kind of like a way you act in front of oppression is not the word I want to use, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's reacting resistance. To a system.
Wow. See, let's go back full circle. Medium is the message. Do you find that blog posts do the same service as like a DIY magazine or a zine?
Or do you think it becomes oversaturated?
Right, because there's so many blogs.
Oh, yeah.
It's many voices.
In a broader sense, like, yes, our media market is super saturated. No one has any idea what they're doing. No one has any idea what they're doing, every single word could have been preceded by an explicative. I didn't, because it's the radio. That's where my mindset is at. There is so much oversaturation, but in the saturation, you have niches everywhere. People who are doing very specific things that could not have done it before. It could be specific bits of trade journalism. We're about, like, talking about wind farms. You could talk about like fashion, the gay LGBTQA community. Those little niches would not have been possible without blogs. There's a lot of fluff, but they're for the people who find those
They
pockets,
serve a purpose, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
There is a purpose to so much of it. So yes, the spirit lives on. There's always going to be spam. There's just more of it now, in the same way that you had people, you had corporate newsletters in the 50s that never were read, and you had hobos who were making newspapers that were barely even in English. Not that those don't have any historical purpose, because I talked to a very long time about a woman who was archiving hobo newspapers.
I would actually be so
That's
interested
insane.
In
That's
hobo
just
newspapers.
Such an interesting topic. I can't
yeah.
Even,
Whoa.
Okay. Can't even wrap my mind around it.
There's a designer out there who would find these little farming, I don't know what they're called. They're like sketchbooks, but they would write down times of day the sun would rise. And
set. Like almanacs? Farming?
Yeah. Field notes. And he went in and cataloged all of these dated field notes that people would just throw away. And it's so interesting just to sit back and think about someone held this and this was a part of their life every single day. Right. There are just so many. I don't know. We're going off.
Well,
track a little bit.
I think the point of that is you're talking about a sheer breadth of information.
Yeah.
And we take data for granted today because so much like me typing words on YouTube and getting music like I've been doing today.
Yeah.
is really easy. And there's so much data behind it. Whereas in ye olden days of pen and paper, you had to write all that information down. It doesn't make it any less important. But it sort of shows how the quantity that we have today has made it sort of trivial.
Yeah.
This reminds me of last week, Jen Finstrom, friend of the show, outreach coordinator at the
Shout out to Jen.
Hey, Jen. She's doing the peer tutor and mentor summit right now. But she mentioned that she had peer tutor and mentor summit round robin sheets of paper, instructions from years ago. And she says, I just keep all of that stuff just to reference back to later. And think about what an amazing catalog that she ends up keeping of, and I think it's not just writing things like what instructions there were, but how we used to design things. Mm-hmm. You know, she keeps books, she has stacks of books and magazines everywhere, and to just be able to see how we change over the years and what design practices stay or what writing methods or strategies or genres stick around is so interesting.
And then to see how they recycle back around as well. Things relive.
What stays? Yeah. What do we look at and say, that's so outdated? I can't believe it's still there. Yeah, crazy.
I think Beautiful. That is about all we have time for today.
Oh, wow.
The hour has flown by.
Yeah.
Alex, thank you so much for coming
Friend
on.
Of the
yeah,
show.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I'd like to have you back.
I'm so glad I had you.
Yeah, it's a good idea, Kate. Nice job, Kate.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy.
All right, Scroll Nation, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week, same time, same place. Same Scrawl Radio. In the meantime, enjoy your Halloween weekend. We didn't talk at all about Spooky
Happy
Scary
Halloween.
Rhetoric.
Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.
All right. See you guys soon. Have a safe weekend, and we will see you next week. Thank you.